Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. In a world that's changing more rapidly than we can keep up with, in which lightning advances in technology are wiping out entire industries and jobs, and where the warranties once attached to a lifetime of training, skills and knowledge are fast becoming worthless, how do we create a new sense of security for ourselves, a new purpose, a new passion, new careers? According to my guest today, in a future where nothing is guaranteed, success now hinges on one quality that all of us possess, but few of us appreciate: our ability to dream, to innovate, to create. Barnett Bain is an award-winning filmmaker, radio broadcaster, educator, and creativity expert. He's also the author of the book Of Doing and Being. His film credits include the Oscar-winning What Dreams May Come with Robin Williams, Emmy Award nominee Homeless to Harvard, The Celestine Prophecy, and Milton's Secret with Donald Sutherland. His creativity workshops guide people of all ages and walks of life to expand their visions of what is possible and develop their gifts and talents with passion. Barnett Bain joins me now to share why creativity is the one skill set that can give us the resilience to thrive through the rapid changes we face today. Barnett Bain, welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here with you and to be with all of your listeners.
Barnett, your creative output is quite prodigious. You've written, directed and produced some very creative films. You teach creativity workshops. You consult with business executives and private clients, and you've written two books. I'm curious to know, at what point did you feel compelled to extend yourself beyond the film industry to teaching what you've learned about creativity in workshops and books?
It sort of went the other way around. I have understood for as far back as I can remember, I had some sense that creativity was love's work, and that creativity, another way of saying it, is that creativity is the is expression, is how humans express their consciousness. And so that has always been my primary interest. I've been both a seeker and a finder for as long as I can remember, going way back into childhood. And along the way, a certain expressions of that journey show up as being a husband and being a father and being a writer and being a filmmaker and being a teacher. But it's not the other way around. These are simply the organic expressions of developing and expanding consciousness.
What you're saying is music to my ears. You know, creativity is something that has been an enormous passion throughout my life. And I certainly understand that when I am not being creative, I am not at all happy. So I really hear you there. The thing is, many people believe that they're not especially creative, but we only have to look at children to know that creativity is a quality that's innate within all of us. So why do you think it is that as adults we tend to compartmentalize and even minimize its role in our lives?
Well, we do it in the same way that it's said that fish, a fish may not know that it's in water. There is no such thing as an uncreative act. There is no such thing as an uncreative moment. Human beings are always creating all of the time, 24/7, with every thought, with every choice, with every belief, with every decision, with every attitude, with every emotion and feeling, with every mood. These are all creative acts. They're not all, they're not always aware acts. They're not always conscious acts, but they are no less acts of personal volition, and they are always creative. But what is what's happened is, as a society, we have, as a secular society, we have siloed out a very, very narrow bandwidth of activity that we call artistic. And we only consider those very, very narrow activities as artistic or slash creative. And we do ourselves a tremendous disservice by foreclosing ourselves from being being included in a community that knows itself to be growing and expanding its imagination and its sense of possibilities about itself. The moment we say we're not creative, we reduce the ability for our imaginations to expand. We foreclose on possibilities for the future. We become more driven by the past than by the future. We become more, we find ourselves in present, having a present experience that seems to repeat patterns from the past more and more. So I am more interested in supporting people, in modeling for people, in encouraging people to discover their lives and to begin to experience their lives as a creative act. So they become artists of being alive. I am less interested in, I enjoy and I as much as anyone, but I'm less interested in perpetuating the idea that unless you are a singer or a dancer or an athlete or a performer of some kind, that you have no creative abilities.
Why do you believe that unlocking our creativity is critical today, in particular?
Well, what creativity is about when it becomes a conscious practice, what it is about is healing our sense of the past. It's about understanding the kinds of structures and the kind of why our imaginations seem to have boundaries, why we have a certain very predictable boundaries around what we expect. If I say to you, you know, you can in the next 5 years you may find that you're much less stress-free and loving and living more expansively than you'd ever imagined or ever dreamed before. Most people would push back on that. That's, for most people, that is a vision for themselves that is too large. And the reason it's too large is because our imaginations become structured. They become trained by the circumstances that we grow up in, by our families and by our education and by our communities and our religions and our politics. And this is not bad or good or bad. It's just life. But we begin to, our imaginations are highly, highly conditioned and structured in that. And we suddenly have boundaries for what is possible. So when we develop our creative selves, the first thing that happens is those boundaries and limited ideas of self, they get challenged. We hear from them. They push back. And there are skills and practices to relieve some of the hard edges of those old belief structures and to create them so that they're a little bit more pliable and flexible. And then suddenly, lo and behold, our imaginations become a little bit juicier and a little bit grander and a little bit broader. And when we have broader imaginations, it's not simply, it doesn't simply lead to pretty pictures or music. A broader imagination leads to an expanded menu of possibilities for the circumstances of our life, the qualities of experience that we are willing to have. You know, it's sometimes said that we get the love we think we deserve, or you know, I like to say we get the life that we expect, and we get the life that we can't have a life that is larger than what we can imagine. And so it's very important to begin to train, to retrain our conditioned self so that we have a juicier imagination. We can give and receive more love in all of the myriad ways that that can be expressed. Yes, through the traditional arts, but also a juicier imagination empowers mothers to love children in more expansive ways, and fathers to relate to families in more expansive ways, and to it allows us to see each other more clearly, to hear each other more clearly, and to receive input more clearly. It allows us to expand the quality and the circumstances of our life. And as we look out in the times that we're living in currently, these are really stressful times. And there are many, many challenges that we face that really have no solutions, no obvious solutions, and the pace that challenges pile up is unprecedented. We've never had an experience where so many challenges pile up so quickly that it's just more than we can handle in a linear way. And so that's going to require a different magnitude, a different juiciness of imagination, capacity of imagination to deal with. We're going to have, you know, we're pouring in 20 ounces of water into 10-ounce glasses, and we're going to be very, very stressed unless we can begin to develop our imaginations to keep pace with the magnitude of the challenges that we face.
Of course, creativity and imagination are widely undervalued in education. You know, arts programs in America and in the UK are being cut from schools. You know, I think that what they've been trying to do for many years is foster conformity, not creativity. And yet what we're seeing now, as you point out in your book, that the kinds of jobs that they have been training people, you know, to teaching, conforming children in a particular way to be ready for, won't even exist by the time today's kids leave school. And that leaves kids, you know, many kids in a very difficult and challenging place, unprepared for the future.
Yes, I think you're right. That's so, so true. Many of these jobs, many of the jobs that people would be surprised if they had a sense of the kinds of jobs that will not exist in a few years, in a very few years. There will be no need for most lawyers, for most accountants. So many of what were considered white-collar jobs. You know, first the blue-collar jobs were replaced by technology and automation, and now the white-collar jobs as well. And so it is critical that we begin to learn how to develop imagination and to develop our creative capacities. And as I said, that begins with becoming close and intimate and understanding the ways that our ideas about ourselves, our feelings about ourselves, our self-images, our thoughts, our belief structures, the way that they were conditioned, the way that they were trained. We have to understand that so that we can make peace with that in order for us to expand those ideas. It's these personal psychologies that have to be understood and then they can be dismantled, they can be grown, then we have all kinds of opportunities to do innovation. The other piece that is important to consider around this issue of education and creativity is that you're absolutely right. It is a tragedy. It's not a disservice to our children that creativity is not concentrated upon in schools. For another reason, it is creativity and music and those subjects that are other than factual, that are other than those that involve the head, computations, mm-hmm. mathematics, analysis. All of the ones that do not, the ones that involve the head are critical, but the ones that do not involve the head, those are the ones that art, music, appreciation of beauty, ethics, these are the ones that are cut from our educational programs because they're not perceived to be a value, when in fact, these are the programs that foster in our children the ability to have empathy,
yes,
to come from the heart, to be in their body, and not to just have their entire focus of attention living in their head. Most children, most adults for that matter, myself included, are quite challenged around incorporating their own consciousness and their awareness into their bodies in any way, sustained way. If you say to somebody, where do you exist? Put your hand on where you think you are. Almost always, they put their hands on their heads. And in this way, we have become separated from our bodies, and we've become very analytical. Our bodies don't analyze and judge, and our head does. And it's important. It's a critical function. But it's not the only function, and now we live in a society that doesn't know that. There are many other kinds of intelligence, and none of those live in the head. So there are intelligences that are beyond logic and reason, and those dwell in the body. And those are precisely the kinds of maturity that can be trained in children with programs that stress the arts and gym, and these are the skills that involve other intelligences than logic and reason. And in order for us to expand our creativity and our imagination in order to meet the challenges of a world that's becoming new, we are going to have to add on different intelligences that are all latent in all of us, but are relatively undeveloped in most of us. Most of us put all of our attention on developing our capacity of logic and reason and thinking, but very rarely intuiting, imagining, and connecting.
I'm going to hold you there, Barnett. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest today is filmmaker, producer, educator, and creativity expert Barnett Bain. We're talking about why success in today's rapidly changing world now hinges on our ability.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Hello, this is Dr. Donice Worden, and I'm excited to tell you about homeopathic injections from Hevert Pharmaceuticals. I utilize them in my practice for pain, inflammation, depression, and other medical conditions. I'm achieving excellent results, and I've seen no adverse reactions. I encourage you to explore these novel treatments.
Call Hevert today at 855-387-6466 to find a practitioner in your area to administer these FDA-registered medications. 855-387-6466.
change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Barnett Bain, in the Book of Being and Doing, you offer many very effective exercises and suggestions for developing our creativity. Before we move on to looking at some of those, I just want to continue with children for a moment because it is so important what they're showing us. Many of the children that I meet, and I do meet a lot of them, are actually saying now, we learn by doing, not just by hearing, not having facts stuffed into us. So they're already, they know what they need, you know, to learn and to grow. As you've pointed out, you know, the very things working from the body and not from the head. You have, some of your creativity content has been used by the White House in their curriculum for communities, schools and corporations. Tell us how, what they're actually doing and how that's being received.
It's been, well, it was used in the Obama White House. I don't know that it's a focus. In the current White House, I hope so. I haven't heard anything about it, but it was used in the last administration. And I'm not sure what else needs to be said about that. It really speaks to certain priorities that I understand, by the way. I fully understand a worldview that elevates doing over being, that elevates thinking over being and over imagining, and that equates thinking with imagining. So I understand that. So it's, I hope my listeners, our listeners, will have some appreciation for that worldview. I don't think it's bad or wrong. It's simply a different approach. Now, in my view, it is an approach that will yield increasingly stressful challenges because trying to outthink life itself, the head, logic and reason, analysis, mathematics, that only deals with a certain subset of reality, which we've made the whole thing. We've made it the whole game. The world seems to be showing us that there's more to it than logic and reason, and the challenges that we face are not going to be met by logic and reason. And so It's my desire and my passion and certainly a lot of fun to explore, well, what is there beyond logic and beyond reason? What else is there? And there is an endless opportunity to begin to explore the creativity that lives outside of logic. I'm more interested in where we're going than where we've been, what we can learn rather than what we can affirm inside of logic and reason. What can we learn about aliveness? What can we learn about the different kinds of intelligences, about intelligences of the body, musical intelligences, and geometric intelligences, and empathic intelligences. There's everything is, in my view, alive. Everything is meaningful. Everything is connected. And the head, it operates by labeling and separating and slicing and dicing, and that's an important quality. But it does not have any attunement to the holistic nature of things. And that is what that is the realm of the imagination.
You know, I interviewed Matt Damon's mum recently. She's a professor of early childhood development, and she wrote a book called Taking Back Childhood, in which she shared how our children are losing. We are taking away imagination from them. The kinds of toys that we present them with do not allow them to use their imagination because they succumb, you know, figures from movies. They come, you know, circumscribed in a sense, you know, by the movie, by the personalities. They have computer games that they can play. Where is the imagination in some of that? In your experience, you know, working so closely with creativity, with your curriculum having been used in communities, schools and corporations, are you aware that people generally are becoming more cognizant of the need to bring back imagination and creativity into children's lives?
I think that people are. The question to me is not whether people are aware of the need and of the benefit. I think they are almost entirely, almost across the board. How they go about that, that's where the important distinctions are to be made. When we attempt to go about teaching creativity from the head, we are not teaching creativity or expanding imagination. The imagination is a capacity that is trained by our circumstances. And so all of the disappointments and the all of the hurts and all of the injuries that we each sustain as small children, all of our desires for love that are not sufficiently met, or our desires for independence that are not sufficiently met. Sometimes we're either inundated with other people's attention as when we're little, or we feel disconnected from other people's attentions that we crave. All of this is what forms our sense of self. And unless the sense of self that was formed very, very young, unless that is understood and seen and addressed, we can't really open up our imaginations or our creative capacities, because the secret is that the creativity is not born in the head. It's born in the body. It lives in the body. It lives in the personal body, and it lives in the body of the world. And the head cannot connect to the body of the world. Only our personal bodies can connect through feelings and emotions to to the body of the world. So a poem is, as Robert Frost said, a poem does not begin in the head. It begins with a feeling, it's an uncried tear, or an excitement in the belly at the sight of something beautiful. So creativity is not born in the head, but the head will never understand that. And so the good news is that it's not really, we don't have to lament and we don't have to be worried that the world's in a terrible place and our children don't have the benefit of a juicy environment to develop their imaginative capacities. By that I mean to develop their capacities to feel deep emotions, along with the capacity for logic and linear thinking, both. Because when we take that on for ourselves as adults or as parents or as family or as friends, or just when we take that on for ourselves and we begin to develop that, and we're never too old to begin to develop that, to begin to become aware of how is my sense of the world formed by my earliest years, and to deal with some of the circumstances that I continue that molded me and that I continue to hold in the form of beliefs and continue to give energy to, and that continues to be the repository of so much of the energies that are available to me to express in other ways. When we as adults take on that wonderful opportunity, it miraculously impacts those around us, especially our children.
Especially our children, yes. As a film producer...
It's non-linear. It's the head that makes everything linear. It's the head that
yes.
pulls everything back. It's our heads that have a love affair with the straight line. The nature of imagination and creativity is not a straight line.
Absolutely. As a film producer and a director and writer, you've worked with some of Hollywood's most creative artists. What is the most important thing that we could learn from them, that you have learned from them?
Well, the very, very best, and by best, That's a sticky word, but I use it advisedly. By best, I mean to say those that are able to achieve a depth of connection to expanding their sense of themselves and their possibilities for themselves and the possibilities for the world and their art. Those that are that have been most impressive to me in their capacity to do that all have the same thing in common, which is they know how to move the focus, the lens through which they interact with the world, to move it down into the body so that it is not entirely happening above the eyebrows. They have a very developed body awareness. They have a sense of the aliveness that moves through their bodies in a sense of an experiential way. And so they have a great empathy. Empathy does not live in the head either. And so when people have a limited relationship with their bodies and the aliveness in their bodies and what are places that feel expanded in their bodies and feel loose in their bodies, as opposed to, you know, you say to somebody, what are they feeling? And what are you feeling? And they say, nothing. What do you feel in your body? Nothing. It's not because they're bad or wrong, it's because they really don't have any of the attunement They haven't not developed an attunement to be in their body. They're so in their head. You know, what are you feeling? Well, let me think about that. Where they go, not where, let me feel about it, they think about it. So the greatest artist that I have had the pleasure to witness, to be involved with, do have magnificent intellects, but even more important, they are aware of themselves in their bodies. And so they have the capacity for empathy, they have a capacity for compassion, they have a capacity for passion. None of these things are thoughts. They have a sense of deep, deep menu of and repertoire of feelings that they have access to. And most people don't have access to feelings. Most people have access to thoughts about feelings. For most of my life, I never felt, I had never had any understanding of what fear was, because I never felt it, although I was always plagued by fear. But what I was plagued by were thoughts about fear. Thoughts about fear is anxiety. Fear itself is a feeling that happens in the body. It's not something you think about. But we as a culture have not been trained that way, and the most exquisite artists that I've had the pleasure to meet, it's in that way that they are leaders. They model for us what it is to be in their bodies, to feel connected, to have an awareness of their body feeling. And that's very, very special.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbear, and my guest is Barnett Bain. We'll be back in a few moments with more on creativity, the skill set that Barnett Bain says we all possess but often overlook, that is the antidote to the exponential disruption of life as we know it. Stay tuned.
Cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Hello, this is Dr. Donice Warden, and I'm excited to tell you about homeopathic injections from Hevert Pharmaceuticals. I utilize them in my practice for pain, inflammation, depression, and other medical conditions. I'm achieving excellent results, and I've seen no adverse reactions. I encourage you to explore these novel treatments.
Call Hevert today at 855-387-6466 to find a practitioner in your area to administer these FDA-registered medications. 855-387-6466.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee, and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Barnett Bain, the Book of Doing and Being contains a number of exercises that you designed to activate creativity by jostling the connections between the subconscious and the conscious. Tell me more about those.
Well, there are many, many practices that invite one to stimulate underused or ignored or underdeveloped aspects of ourselves. And some of them are very simple and very straightforward, and some of them are some of them can be as playful as paying attention to the rhythms around you, the sound of the washing machine rocking and rattling, rocking and rolling and rattling in the next room. What is the rhythm of it? What is the symphony of that sound along with the garbage truck that's coming up outside at the street? I mean, there are all kinds of ways that we can begin to tune our attention, to pay attention to the world in a different and unexpected way. And then, of course, there are also invitations to slow down and to move the point of our attention from our head, from our thought stream, into our bodies. And that, in some ways, begins with acknowledging that we do have a thought stream and what's going on with it. And maybe taking a few breaths and settling down and centering a little bit and closing your eyes and just becoming aware of the breath going in and out of your nose. When paying attention to that with some awareness of, oh, and now all of a sudden my mind drifts off. And this thought and that thought comes up, and without getting on board and climbing on that horse and riding it around, just being aware of it and gently bring my thoughts, my attention back away from the thoughts to the feeling of the breath going in and out. And so those kinds of practices as well. There are practices that number well beyond my ability to count, because as I said. Everything is a creative act. And when we can become conscious of our personal, I think of it like a little a bird's nest or a little cat's cradle of habituated thinking and feeling and habituated fixed ideas about life. And we can begin to, once we begin to take stock of them, and there are practices in the book to support us in doing that, but once we take stock of them, as these come up, we suddenly have a thought, or sometimes we have a feeling, and we can realize 99 times out of 100 that this is an old feeling and not about now. And this is an old thought and not about now. And when I know that, I can put in the clutch a little bit. I can put it in neutral. And I can say, wow, this is not about now. So what is about now? Now I have an opportunity to make a virgin choice. How remarkable. But unless we know that, then we really could not know or act differently unless I know that most of my knee-jerk actions and choices have been programmed in so long ago.
I found the book to be extremely productive and interesting. As a writer myself, I know what it's like to have those moments where you just don't know where to start or you're completely out of inspiration. And I love some of the word hacks you use, how to use a newspaper or a publication to prime the pump of creativity. I've actually done that myself in the past and got my, you know, complete opening to a book that way by reading something in another book, which sparked off the imagination and gave me the perfect, you know, place to begin. You know, there's some wonderful things in your book, and in itself, that is very creative, I find. You know, the array of suggestions that you offer. I love that you recommend tapping for EFT, and I really, really enjoyed your The Amazing Thing. Would you just share a little bit about that with us?
The Most Amazing Thing. Well, we all have underneath a layer cake of strategies to get along in life. We all have a kind of a luminous joy that sometimes we lose touch with. And so one of the ways to recover and reestablish that is, I say, you know, put your attention, call to mind a moment, an experience in which you felt wonderful, that you felt connected, where you felt attuned, where you felt joyful, where you felt loved, where you felt loving, whichever. Maybe it's that time that you excelled at a sport, or, you know, they say in the book, hit a hole in one. Or maybe it was that time with you remember the family Thanksgiving or Christmas, and just a perfect moment of feeling connected and loving and loved. Maybe it's a relationship that you have with a particular loved one or a pet. And you, when you think of that, you can attune to how it felt, how glorious it felt. Maybe it's the sense of pride and accomplishment at having achieved a great sale, if you're a salesperson, or a great goal. So maybe it's watching your child take their first steps. Maybe it's a young mother, and maybe it's that sense of joy and that indescribable ecstasy of looking at a newborn baby and having carried that baby. So I ask people to find what it is and put their attention on it and attune to the quality of the feeling, that amazing feeling. And the quality of that feeling is to feel where, to allow the feelings in the body, if you're in touch with it, to allow that feeling to express itself on your face. And that feeling of love, that feeling of accomplishment, that feeling of achievement, whatever it is, allow it to come up and express itself in your eyes, in the corners of your eyes. So this feeling, this felt sense, I call the most amazing thing. And it's kind of like a GPS, because when you go to it, you can go to it at any time. But when you go to it, one of the mysteries of life is that that is causal. That energy itself is causal. It will have impact on the quality of the choices that you make and the quality of the mood that you have for the rest of the day. That mood will also have impact on the kinds of situations that you attract into your life, the kinds of situations, the ways that you respond to situations. When you come from the most amazing thing, you're coming from the part of yourself that is luminous, filled with light.
Many people have wonderful imaginations and brilliant ideas, but somehow never seem able to ground them, whether because of self-criticism, judgment, fear, anxiety, or a belief that they're unable to produce something tangible without expert help. What advice would you offer them?
Well, the self-criticism and self-judgment, that internal self-talk is trained. It comes from outside. It generally comes from the experience of having others assess and criticize, or witnessing others assessing and criticizing somebody else, and feelings of fear that that might happen to me. So these feelings and judgment, they are themselves. They are themselves exactly the forces that constrict imagination, that constrict our ability to expect and our experience and our ability to experience hope. So when I refer to developing creativity, what I am really looking at is exactly what these forces that you're talking about of self-judgment and criticism, and it begins with understanding them. When and where they became empowered to have impact on my life, it's quite important to become intimate and familiar, close and tender with those experiences, that, because I call them injuries, they're injuries. And those injuries are such that they kind of put an arrested development on our capacity to grow our imagination. And one of the aspects of imagination is the ability to manifest. And when we have these constrictions in our imagination, the first thing that goes is the ability to produce something. We always create what we are most easily able to imagine and what we most expect. So all creativity and all imagination is self-regulated by what am I most easily able to expect, and what am I most easily able to imagine. And for many of us, I am more easily able to imagine disappointment and failure. Even though I desire flow and love and abundance and growth, I am more easily able to imagine disappointment and failure. And I am more easily able to expect disappointment and failure. And so the imagination and the capacity to grow it, to heal it, and in order to put us in a place where we can innovate beyond the limitations, the speed bumps that we have baked into ourselves, it doesn't happen until we go and look very closely at what were the moments that I still carry around, that I'm aware, what were the moments that where I learned how to judge myself, where I learned to lose confidence in myself. When did that happen? Because it is those moments that we continue to feed energy to. And they come up at every time we come to it's like a speed bump. Every time we come to a certain point when I'm going to now, I'm verging on moving beyond my habituated comfort zone. When I come closer and closer to expanding, to stepping out beyond what I am familiar with in terms of imagining or creating or manifesting, then those old injuries are going to interrupt me. And I'm going to start hearing those voices, and I'm going to start feeling those feelings of constriction. And again, those are old feelings and old thoughts and not about now, but until I know that, then I almost always abandon the present. And I go back into that. So what is important to me when I talk about developing creativity and imagination is to support people to learn how to identify these painful, disruptive, repetitive patterns from running your imagination. So we can identify them, so we can interrupt them, we can respond to the old patterns, and build new pathways forward.
Before we bring the show to a close, I just want to make it clear to our listeners that, you know, when people talk about a book on creativity, they tend to think about, oh, it's a book for writers, you know, how to clear, you know, those kind of blocks that prevent you from getting on with your story or creating something you want to create. Your book is much, much bigger in scope. We're really talking about, you know, creating our entire life. And in fact, at one point you say, when you know your whole life is a creative act, you begin to take responsibility for every piece of it, whether it's a paycheck, a marriage vow, or your health and well-being. And I am, you know, one of the things I think is really important that people understand is what you're offering them is not just one piece of it. You're offering something that exercises, suggestions, something that can actually ignite a passion within us that we can use in every single creative endeavor of our life. And I think that's what makes your book stand out.
I'm so appreciative. I'm so grateful for you, for recognizing that. I am not interested in artifacts. I am interested in our lives as conscious, creative expressions.
Barnett Bain, I'm going to have to stop you there. I'm really sorry. I wish I could listen to the rest of what you have to say. But my advice to our listeners is read the book and they will understand exactly what we've been talking about. Barnett Bain, thank you.
Thank you.